Stop thinking about what you can do for your customer. Start thinking about what your customer can do for you. If you start to measure what you're already doing without understanding the actual frameworks of brand growth, then all you're doing is optimizing your current behaviors rather than saying, right, what is the best way to grow my business?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Make It Happen show. I'm Tim Morris, the CEO at The Entourage. And today I'm joined by Adam Ferrier, the co-founder of Thinkabell. We had a really great conversation. Adam really demystifies the world of marketing communications, and he gives some fantastic tips to business owners that might want to get out there and represent their brand better. There's also a key takeaway that we just keep on circling back to in the conversation. So I really want you to keep your ears open for that. Now, before we jump in, there's one thing I do want to apologize for. The audio in this, particularly my audio, leaves a lot to be desired. This was the one recording where we were really impacted by lockdown. It turns out the microphone I grabbed on the fly was just not up to the task. But the great news is Adam sounds fantastic, and that is what it's all about. Let's get into it. Adam Ferrier, it is awesome to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Well, thank you.
Good, good. What's going on in your world these days?
A bit of lockdown, a bit of looking at these four walls, a bit of mixing family life with work life and trying to make the whole thing happen.
A bit of a sense of the walls just closing in on you. Yeah, that's right. Bright days ahead. So to kick us off, I think what would be really good is, so our audience is small business owners, entrepreneurs, kind of in the earlier stages of their career. And marketing is one of those areas. It's a bit opaque for a lot of them. It's hard to get their head around, particularly once you start getting into the bigger stuff like building a brand and building a community. And so I thought a good place to start would be just for you to break us down. Like, what does a full service agency like Thinkabell, like, what does it do in simple ways that everyone can get their heads around?
I like the first half of your question better than the second half about kind of lending into what is marketing more than what Thinkabell does. And the reason why I like it is marketing is everything. And what we try to champion, and we try to champion not having a marketing department, not having a CMO, Chief Marketing Officer, and getting the CEO to change their title to Chief Brand Officer. Mm-hmm. And trying to make the CEO, the founder, whoever runs the business, understand that they are responsible for marketing. They are responsible for the brand. And then if you can start to get that headspace, then you start to realize that every single thing the business does is marketing. So We talk about having a central organizing thought, which is a thought that you drive everything around internally and externally. The other phrase we have is BX before EX before CX, which is a bit of a wanky term. But what we basically mean is understand what the brand experience is. Then make sure that's reflective of the employee experience. And then finally, make sure that's reflective of the customer experience.
Gotcha.
So, So if I, to ramble on a bit, if I use my own agency as an example, our agency is called Thinkabell. But what's interesting about the agency is the proposition is marketing sciences meets hardcore creativity. But we've summed that up in a phrase or a central organizing thought, which is measured magic. Mm-hmm. And then measured magic drives everything we do, from how we structure our team. So we have thinkers and tinkers. We have measured Monday, start Monday meetings off. We have magic hour on a Friday at the end of a week. So the whole rhythm of the agency works around that central organizing thought. But then measured magic also drives everything from what our PowerPoint presentations look like, how our ideas are presented, but also things like invoicing and making sure our invoices have our tone and personality of measured magic on them as well. So it's a central organizing thought that drives through everything the business does. We don't have a marketing department. Everything's marketing. And that's kind of what I'd implore people listening to this to kind of get into the mindset of. Your brand's everything you do.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff in there that I picked up as you've been going through. The first thing that came to my mind was founder-led businesses very often have that the founder is the chief brand officer, and they really embody everything about the business. And like, we're a founder-led business with our founder Jack DeLosa. The Musks of the world and the Bransons of the world are like that as well. And so I can see in that sense you just have a natural connection between founder representing the business. It all comes together around them.
But in other businesses, particularly that those that aren't so marketing led, maybe they've come from a technical background or they're just, you know, a services business, I can see that being a big step for them. And so maybe just digging into that first, like how do you get a founder, a business owner who's not marketing inclined or not, and to take that leap?
It's a wonderful question. You're absolutely right. If my agency is dealing with a founder-led business, we just listen to the founder and do as they say. we bring to life their vision. And often, you're exactly right, they kind of know and bang, they get it.
Yeah.
If you're not the founder or the original idea of a business is somebody else's, then I think there's a two-stage process to understanding it. Number one is spend a little bit of time capturing and documenting what the brand's about. So agree on a central organizing thought, as I've said, about what brings to life the brand. Try to get your head around all that stuff. People talk about emotions, really important. It's not just what you do, but it's why you do it and all that kind of stuff. That's a much bigger conversation. Try to drill down on your values and personality. Try to and just document those. Try to understand what your core competencies are and your core benefits, and try to understand ultimately what you want your customer to understand about your brand. That's step one, right? Just trying to document to understand it. The next step is the much harder step, which is having sunk costs against that central thought. So you have to stick with that thought over time, and therefore you have to put enough effort, money, resources, whatever it is, into making that thing come to life. And then that gives you the confidence to go, right, this is what our brand's about. We will stay on this journey. But if you don't have sunk costs against that one thought, you're going to constantly doubt yourself and not know which direction to go in.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that with having launched a number of my own businesses, being intimately involved in many businesses getting off the ground. It's like that first, you know, the name and the logo and the identity of it. You know, at first it's nothing. Like it only exists because you bring it to life. And I like that you put sunk cost into it. But also that's how it kind of gets into your psyche as well.
That's right. And then you just end up saying, right, well, this has got to be it because I spent 100K on it or whatever it is. And so then it just puts you on a journey, right? And then you're on your way.
Just back it in. So, well, why don't we let's drill down into measured magic because I love it. It's such a good example of what we're talking about here, about a central thought around which everything builds. But it's also at the essence of what you do. So, can you take us through measured magic, what it means to you, and how you deliver that through the agency?
Agencies have grown up in a world which has been anti-science, anti-measurement. And the chief creative officer saying, just trust me, I know what's good for your brand. And it's all been a load of wank. And I think what's happened now is behavioral economics, the start of behavioral economics in 2002 and the popularity of that, the popularity of marketing sciences and a thing called the Ehrenberg-Bass Institute has given us a lot of language and a lot of ways to measure brand growth and how brands actually grow and what's good and bad. And so there is now a fair bit of science that's permeated through its way through into marketing communications. Mm-hmm. And so our proposition is marketing sciences meets hardcore creativity. So we're embracing all of that, embracing measurement, embracing what actually works, what doesn't, and doing evidence-based creativity. And so that's kind of what we're about. But the other bit of that is hardcore creativity. So at the end of the day, just not losing sight of creativity is our competitive advantage. And it's if you can instill kind of creative solutions into your business model, no matter what it is, and have a high degree of creativity, you'll be able to solve problems faster. And, you know, we believe we can create kind of magical kind of solutions.
Yeah, awesome. So as a someone running a small business, so we're certainly focused on, you know, the data, the numbers, testing. But I'm getting the feeling that we must be doing it at a fairly rudimentary level compared to what you're talking about. Because what we do around returning, like measuring return on advertising spend, A/B testing within a campaign, you know, where we spend the money. Yeah. It's not that complex, but the stuff you're talking about sounds like it's another level.
I don't think so. I think what you're probably missing are the fundamentals. So what you're probably doing is optimizing what you're already doing rather than actually knowing what the best thing to do is. Does that make sense? So if you start to measure what you're already doing without understanding the actual frameworks of brand growth, then all you're doing is optimizing your current behaviors rather than saying, right, what is the best way to grow my business? How do I understand that? And then you go into the principles of marketing sciences, basically. And so luckily, a chap called Byron Sharp in the Institute, the Ehrenberg Bass Institute, has kind of boiled it all down for us into two kind of basic principles, which is mental and physical availability. So being stuck in people's heads as much as possible and being as easy to buy is probably the kind of the biggest fundamentals of marketing science. But then where that leads you to is constant penetration into new markets and constantly trying to acquire new customers is probably on balance more important than loyalty or getting repeat purchases out of current clients. Now, if you're optimizing what you're doing, optimization is going to take you more to what you're currently doing, current relationships with clients and so forth, or customers, whatever you want to call them, rather than thinking about new markets, people who don't have a relationship with your brand, et cetera.
The model that we use, which is, you know, super common, is that top of funnel, middle funnel, bottom funnel. And we are very, very focused on increasing the reach of our top of funnel, just because we know that, you know, people that have engaged with us at that top level in any way, could be listening to the podcast, it could be attending one of our events or an ebook, you know, that just that first touch point then makes the conversion or the moving them further down the bottom of the funnel faster, cheaper, easier. It's like topping it up all the time.
Tim, that's fantastic. And then the other build I'd have on that is if you're focusing on top of funnel and you're knowing that if you can look after the top of funnel, then it all kind of trickles down from there. The other thing is just realize that the customer is the start point, not the end point for any conversation. So if you can reach those customers, but then get them to do the marketing for you and get them to spread the word for you, then you're getting a whole lot of earned media, social media associated. So think about when you're targeting those first customers, don't think of that as a hit or as a impression or as an ends in itself. Give them the tools to pass the message on. And then propagate out from there, if that makes sense. Stop thinking about what you can do for your customer. Start thinking about what your customer can do for you. Because the other benefit of that is the more your customer does for you, the more they like you. So the more loyal they become to you. So, you know, through minimizing cognitive dissonance, basically. But if you can get your customers to invest themselves into you and your brand by promoting you or in any other kind of way or giving you helping you in some way, it binds them more towards you as a business.
Yeah. Do you have an example top of mind? Have you seen someone do that really well recently where they've gotten their customers to spread the word for them or do something on their behalf?
Well, you'll do that now with me. You'll ask me to promote this podcast in some way and you'll correct. Follow this up and say, oh, Adam, that was great. You were amazing. best one I've done of those for ages. here's all of our social feeds and everything. Do you mind just promoting it? As soon as I do that to you, I'm investing something of myself into your business and your brand, and I'll watch out for it more and probably speak more positively about it. As an example, it's a little bit dated now and it's a bit cumbersome, but I still love it. It's so basic. There's a business called Switch Kites. It's a kite surfing business. And they just offer a 20% discount to anybody who promotes their brand 5 times on social media. So all you have to do is prove you've promoted the brand 5 times on social media, and they'll give you a 20% discount on anything you buy. Super simple.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good one. I think we might try and adopt that. before we get too far away from it, I actually wanted to come back to you say you have cultural rituals around Measured Magic. You start the week by that and you finish the week. We're really big on this. Like we do advocate baking in cultural rituals into the business. It becomes the rhythm of how the business operates. Can you just talk us through those in a bit more detail?
I love it, Tim. I love the fact that you, again, have picked up on that. We also agree it's really, really important because it helps signpost what you're about. And it's creating a culture that's genuinely differentiated from what other people do. So we have the rituals, so Measure Monday, Magic Hour, beginning and end of every week. But it's also the names of our people. So we have thinkers and tinkers. And so with that is a different operating system. So they're learning a different way of doing something than every other agency. So they have to adopt a different persona. Then we have our own internal process, which is the four-leaf clover, which people have to kind of invest time and learn. And that's about creating differentiation and our own way of doing things, which makes it easier for us to do stuff internally.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, everyone who comes into the agency has to learn that process. So they're learning a new skill. They're learning something different, learning a good way of solving problems. But also, if you've spent a bit of time learning it, then it's probably a skill you want to kind of, stick with for a while.
Yeah.
And so we feel it's all, in my language, all of those rituals are about creating a really strong, cohesive brand that everyone gets.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. There are actually a lot of similarities. So this is the Make It Happen show. On Fridays, we finish the week with the Made It Happen circle. So it's everyone coming together and, now we're doing it virtually, of course, but normally we all come together and share wins of the week and recognize who's gone above and beyond, demonstrated the values. So that's important. I think mental models, your four-leaf clover sounds really interesting. I'm a big advocate of mental models. We have frameworks and models for how to build a business. That's what we teach our members. But then it's also used internally, because the thing I find is that just verbally running through something or even having it written down and training someone on it is so open to interpretation in so many different ways. But having a model that is particularly, for me, visual, that you can take to people and go, here you go, here's how we think about something and here's how we want you to think about it. It's just super powerful. I'm going to hit you up to see your four-leaf clover later on.
Yeah. It's in there as well. That's my book, Stop Listening to the Customer. It's one of them. It's what I love about having a model on how to solve problems is you don't spend time or wasted energy thinking about how you're actually going to solve a problem. That bit's done. We've got the framework on how you're going to solve it. How you're going to present it and so forth. Now all you need to worry about is actually solving it.
Yeah.
As opposed to the process you're going to use to solve it, if that makes sense.
That saves
a lot of time.
Yeah, makes tons of sense. One of those models I talked about that we teach business owners is every business has six essential elements. Right? You've got your marketing, sales, product development and delivery. They're the things that drive growth. And then you've got operations, finance and people. And those are the things that enable all the growth. And we have this in a circular diagram. And we go through it ad nauseum with them. And I say, the reason I want you to do this is for most business owners who are accidental business owners, when you ask them, like, tell me about your business, they're all over the place. You're like, well, run me through how your business works and where the problems are. They're all over the place. I say, what I want to do is give you a model that you can just always think about your business through. It's like Steve Jobs with his black t-shirt, right? Don't waste decision-making power or thinking power thinking about how you're going to think about your business. Have a framework and just always run through that.
Yeah, Tim, you and I think we'd get on very well. So 100%, and it's going to be the most boring podcast where we just tell each other how wonderful our reflective thinking is. It's 100%. The other thing is it can also happen at an individual level as well. So it's not necessarily, there's so much information you have to absorb in the world. If you can have a model of how the world works or how your industry works, whether you're a business owner or not, in the case of marketing communications, just get a framework. So all of the information you absorb, you can just chunk into that model and keep on building on that model. Super important.
Hi everyone, I just wanted to jump in here to let you know if you're enjoying this episode, it doesn't need to stop here. We've taken this episode plus all the other episodes and also video footage from the interviews and made it available for free. There's also a bunch of fantastic guides, tools and resources you can use to grow your business. To grab those tools, just go to www.the-entourage.com/podcast. Right, let's get back into the show.
And do you think, And then we'll move on from models in case anyone's listening. Going, all right, I've enough of the models. Enough of the models. Do you think it's so important how right the model is, or is it more that you just have a model that you use?
Having a model accounts for a lot of the variance of getting shit done. Getting stuff done well, you probably want to have a model that's pretty well understood. But there's more than one way to skin a cat, obviously. And what I'm really liking in my world is you got the marketing sciences over here. You got self-styled gurus like Gary V over here.
Mm-hmm.
What Gary V says is completely the antithesis of what marketing sciences says in terms of how to build brands. But they both seem to be doing a pretty good job. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I'd be more inclined, just because of the person I am, to have an evidence-based thing, which means I'd have the right model. But I think just having a point of view, and again, it's a little bit having a model of some sort, at least you start to get confidence in what you know, and it starts to build on each other. So it's almost just more important just to have a model, I think, rather than it being right.
Yeah, start with that, refine it as you go.
Yeah.
Maybe change camps every now and again.
Yeah, change the language of the axes or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Massive change. So you touched on an area there that I definitely wanted to segue into, and that's kind of like the difference, I suppose, between different marketing approaches. And really what I wanted to talk about was, you know, what big business marketing communication and then small business marketing communication. Are there a couple of key differences in your mind? And then we'll talk about who should adopt what.
Yeah. So a lot of our clients, you know, car companies, insurance, the big brewers, you know, there's stuff like that. But most of those companies also always have little brands as well, but they need to start up. So Bega is a client of ours, massive, you know, it's got Vegemite and stuff like that, but it's also got brands that they incubate at the start. And so when you're starting a brand, getting the positioning right, or getting a positioning right, is really important. But then if you think about the different ways you can build that brand over, you've got owned assets, you've got earned media, you've got shared media, which is kind of leveraging somebody else's media in some way, and then you've got bought media. It's your owned and your earned assets that account for more of a variance, and getting things to be remarkable. And so getting things talked about within and baked into whatever it is that you do is really important. So with Bega, we launched a honey brand called Bee Honey. The proposition was, it all starts with a bee. It was the only honey brand that looks after the bee more than it does the consumer. So therefore, the packaging's all purple because bees love purple. But then we also launched it with a thing called the Purple Hive Project, which is a bunch of hives that are interconnected, and they've got little infrared cameras on them, and they can detect the varroa mite on the back of a bee's back and highlight the beekeeper plus all the other hives. And that's trying to stop the varroa mite from entering Australia. And so I launched that, got a 12-minute segment on Landline, National Geographic's done a big thing about it, it's won lots of awards around the world. It didn't cost that much money to do, but what it does do is it then allows the brand owner to go into Coles and Woolies and say, look, This is Bee Honey. It's got beautiful purple packaging. So you know, bees love it, but also might stand out on shelf, which is a sea of yellow. But also we're doing this kind of category leadership thing to protect the honey supply in Australia. And now that brand has got 12% market share, and in 18 months, it hasn't spent a cent on advertising, but it's just got a really strong reason for being and a strong story that other people want to buy into, because it's doing so doing good. So just coming back to your question, it's what big brands can learn from smaller brands, I think, is about having that kind of owned and earned media mentality. I don't know what little brands can learn from big brands.
Anything they should avoid? Is there anything that a small business owner might see big businesses doing and be like, oh, I really want to be doing that, and you're just like, nah,
don't. Yeah, the biggest thing is to try to advertise in a way that you can't sustain. So don't have a marketing budget bigger than anything that you can sustain ongoing, because what's going to happen is you're going to spend all, you're going to spunk 500 grand or whatever doing an advertising campaign that's going to be a blip, and then very little's going to happen, and you're not going to be able to afford to do that blip again.
Yeah.
It works by continuity, by long-term brand growth. And so you need to only spend what you can afford to keep on spending for the next few years. Don't try to do the opposite.
Don't do your dash all at once.
No, it kind of looks like a balloon, you know. It kind of looks all nice and it go, you know, and then you got nothing left, a little saggy little thing.
I was just trying to think of any, who are some of the businesses that pop up in my mind at the moment who have this central unifying concept really, really well. There are certainly some in the startup space. You know, we've had Simon Griffiths from Who Gives a Crap involved in a number of events with us, and I think they're doing that really, really well.
So I love reminding Simon that I helped him start his business. We won a shitload of awards. We put Simon, we suggested that Simon sit on a toilet for 50 hours until he raised the money, and he live streamed himself on the toilet. But that's how he came to us with a brilliant idea about this. How do I launch the brand? And that's what we suggested he did. This is at a previous agency I was at. But that won a lot of awards, but it also gave, I think, Simon obviously the founder, he knows it, but he just saw the value then of how quickly and easily earned media and PR can work. And he's a PR machine, and his product is fantastic, and his product's fantastic, and et cetera. So it's good.
Oh, that's awesome. I had no idea about that connection. It's a small, small world.
Yeah.
Another one that I'm seeing at the moment, who I don't know the guys, but the Single Use Ain't Sexy business.
Oh.
I just think they're doing a really, really good job. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a very good example of a founder-led business having a really strong idea. And what a great name. And I absolutely love it. I only recently heard about them, but they will do great things, I'm sure.
We'll chase them down, we'll get them on the show. All right, probably the last area that I wanted to touch on before we've got a couple of questions to go through in reasonably rapid fire fashion is a lot of small businesses, as they're starting to grow up, that they want to start working with the big guys. They want to start landing to the bigger clients. They want to start doing, you know, bigger work, so that it's in one way it's them growing up. And this is obviously the space that you play in. Even though you've worked with a lot of small businesses, you also work with the really big ones. So I just wanted to get a couple of tips and strategies for anyone listening. Like, how would a business that's starting to grow up start to, you know, win work from larger businesses or approach larger businesses? A couple of strategies you might be able to impart.
Yeah. So you have to be safe to buy, don't you? Nobody wants to take a risk. I would say we always talk in we and not I. So we ban the word I, and it was especially important when we were small, because it's not about the individual, it's about the brand and the business is buying. And so I'd implore everybody to always say we, no matter what business that you're in, so it feels bigger.
Yep.
And then feel as big as possible. And feeling big is often having good button down collateral material. So, you know, that's the ridiculous things of, if business cards are still a thing, thick business cards, or well-produced assets that look really schmick and look nice, and, you know, clean fonts and a clean presentation, and have a bit of sophistication about all of that. Branding yourself well kind of makes you feel like you're a well-organized business. And I look, you know, you look at really cool, I look at really good restaurants and really good restaurants and that charge a really high margin. Everything is really, really slick, even if it's casual or whatever. The waiter always comes up with a smile. They've got they know what to do. They recommend a cocktail or whatever. And everything just feels well-oiled. And that feeling makes you feel like, oh, this place is well ran, and therefore, you know, I'm going to have good food. I'm going to be able to talk about a good experience.
Yeah.
So just thinking like that, making it feel like you're a very well ran, very slick machine yourself, will give people confidence to take to take a step up. And then the other thing is obviously capturing quotes, reviews, endorsements from the people you want is also obviously very important.
De-risking that decision to go with you.
That's right. So you can standing out is very easy, I think. Standing out while still being safe is just a little bit harder.
You can stand out because you look like the punk option. They might come in and burn the house down.
That's right.
The other, just touching on the that kind of consistency of experience, I think super important for that going for bigger business. But the dual benefit of that is just that's how you increase your marketing and your sales conversion. It's how you increase your customer retention by having that experience all the way through, being consistent and the customer feeling like that they're on a journey that's cohesive. Like we are a marketing and sales led business, and we have to pay attention to that. Otherwise, it kind of all falls apart a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so everything from your first approach to your PR to your onboarding to the actual experience they have if you lose a client. The other thing we do, which I love, is that we track our clients' NPS, Net Promoter Score.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that just gives you really good feedback all the time. Plus, it also constantly opens up the opportunity for conversation about what you could do better as well. So constant monitoring of your performance in some way with your clients, I think, is crucial.
Awesome. All right, Adam, I've got a couple of questions here that neither of us have seen. It's make it happen in a minute. We've got five questions that we move through at reasonably rapid pace. You ready to go?
Yep, go Excellent. For it. Unreal.
All right. Question number one. If you were cryogenically frozen for 100 years, what would be the first question you ask after waking up?
I would just be really fascinated to see if we're all wearing spandex and if everyone is exactly the same, if the dystopian vision of a future has come to life or not.
That's funny. A funny segue here. I derail this segment all the time. So there's a conspiracy theory that starts off that Walt Disney was cryogenically frozen. And then to stop people being able to find that when they search for the internet, that is why Disney released Frozen.
That, my friend, is absurd.
100%. First thing I would say is like, Walt, are you here? When I woke up. All right, question number two. What's one of the most standout advertising campaigns you've worked on?
Share a Coke is kind of probably the biggest. So that's been a massive campaign for Coke in Australia, but also got adopted overseas and by every market, and was massive and continues to still be massive in various parts of the world. But again, it's getting the customer to do something for somebody else, share a Coke with someone else, which is why I love it.
Yeah, great. That's a good tie back. Yeah, that's a good campaign. Everyone knows that one. Awesome. All right, question number three. Other than your own, what is a must-read book for every business owner?
How Brands Grow by Byron Sharp. 100%. Just read that book and it will change your life. It's pretty boring, but it's really, really good.
How Brands Grow. Awesome. Yeah, well, not everything needs to be exciting and interesting if it's got the core principles to get in there.
Yeah.
Question number four. Oh, interesting. Do you practice measured magic outside of Thinkabell, like in your everyday life?
No, I practice chaos outside of my work. There's no measurement in me outside of work. It's all just chaos.
I see. On the other hand, there probably is a fair bit of measurement there, and it probably drives my family crazy. So maybe it's more chaos. All right. This is great. You're tying it back to the small business owners. So if a small business owner wanted to create measured magic in their own business, what's one thing they need to do to make that happen?
Just get that central organizing thought down. Just understand what is it that my business is about and use that central thought to try to drive everything. See if it works on an invoice, on an ad, and on a uniform. and away you go.
Yeah, I think that's certainly my biggest takeaway from this whole discussion. Like, we covered some really, really good stuff, but that central unifying thought and really kind of bake it into who you are and bake into everything you do is something that every business should try to do. Fantastic. Adam Ferrier, it's been awesome having you on. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I think everyone will believe me in that one.
I look forward to the social media posts that I'll be posting this on in a few minutes. 100%.
Got to get your customer to do something for you. And I'll hit you up for the four-leaf clover as well. So, Adam, awesome having you on. Have a great day.
Good on you, Tim. That was fun. Take care.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Make It Happen show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And it doesn't need to end there. We've actually gone and grabbed a whole bunch of extra resources for you. Behind the scenes footage, videos from this and all the other episodes, as well as show notes that you can grab for free. Just head along to www.the-entourage.com/podcast and you can grab all those extra resources. Thanks for tuning in, and I cannot wait to introduce you to our next guest on the next episode.